And I'm going to read from verse 22. It says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he'd dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." When they'd crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word to all the surrounding country people. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick touch the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. It's a very well-known account. Jesus is withdrawn to a solitary place after John the Baptist's beheading, and the crowds have followed him. And so he has compassion on the crowds, he heals the sick. He does the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. And then immediately after feeding the 5,000 is where we pick up our reading. He sends the disciples on ahead of him. And Jesus dismisses the crowd and goes up a mountain to pray. Jesus is headed for a solitary place. By definition, that means he wanted to be alone. Yet when the crowds are there to greet him, he has compassion on them, he ministers to them. And at the end of that ministry, you might assume that he would take himself off in the boat and leave his disciples to dismiss the crowd. But he doesn't. He dismisses the crowd alone and goes to pray. One of Jesus' best known miracles in the feeding of the 5,000 has just happened. And he doesn't take time to debrief with his team, to high-five each other, to share stories. He doesn't stop to celebrate the moment with his disciples. He sends them away and goes and prays. I imagine there must have been some really interesting things to discuss. People who were amongst the crowd who might not have eaten for days, feasting from 5 loaves and 2 fishes. That there would have been some interesting stories and a moment to celebrate everything. And it's just interesting to me that Jesus isn't stopping for his disciples to stand in awe. He's going to get before God. And I wonder if for us, there are moments where God uses our life, we need to be careful about the praise we receive in those moments. It's not what I want to say to you this morning, but I just found it interesting this week that in the moments that God actually takes our lives and does something with them, it would be easy to stop and to tell everybody how wonderful it was, and people stand in awe of you. And actually what I need to do is go before God and thank him that he took me, and by his grace he's used me, and by his generous, generous love, he has lifted my life out of something it wasn't and set it apart for purpose. So Jesus is up all night praying. And the boat is apparently a considerable distance from shore. And Jesus decides, I'll make my way over to it then. and he walks on water. Matthew 14 doesn't seem to make much of it. Verse 25, shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. It's amazing to me that all we have in that moment is a statement of fact. Not a discussion about need. And I have a question about the necessity of the walking on water. Jesus got in a boat to go to a solitary place. Yet crowds met him by walking, on foot, by dry land. So it's clear the place they ended up was accessible by foot. Matthew 14 and verse 13. When Jesus heard what had happened to John, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them and healed their sick. Does he need to walk on water? I'm not sure. Is this a necessity in this moment? It's a lake. It's surrounded by land. He could have found another means of transport if he so wished. But he's Jesus, so he walks on water. He could go a different way, but he doesn't. Because he can. And apparently, the walking was more successful than the sailing. We know the boat is being buffeted by the waves because of the wind from Matthew's account. Here's what Mark 6, recording the same narrative, records. Verse 47, later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them. That's what Mark 6 writes. He's about to walk past them. The sailing's not going brilliantly. And I make the observation that he could just walk. He could just walk on land. Because at times, I think we assume God only does the necessary. He only does what's absolutely needed. And so if it's necessary that a miracle happen, then okay, you know. But actually, Jesus isn't worried about maybe using up all of his power. He's not concerned about whether he'll have enough resources for the future. He's not like, oh, well, if I do this now, I might run out of opportunity to do other miracles that might be more beneficial and needed in the moment. He's got all the power he needs to do everything he wants, when he wants it, how he wants it. So he decides he's walking on water. Is it necessary? I don't know. I don't think so. You can work out your own thoughts about that. But he can. And sometimes, actually, I'm too hesitant to ask for some things because I don't think they're necessarily necessary. And God, would God really do that for me? Because I don't really need it. But actually, he's not limited by the need. It's not an issue of, is this necessary? He can. He does exceedingly abundantly more than you can imagine. That's the deal. And so he walks on water and he scares the disciples. And I think that's fair. The disciples saw him walking on the lake. They were terrified. It's a ghost, they cried out. See, it's a really nice story for us. Jesus walked on water. really nice. But the reality is, if I was in a boat in the middle of the night and a figure comes walking across the water to me, I'm going to be scared too. It's so far out of any expectations the disciples have that their assumption is it's a ghost. And there was a Jewish superstition that the appearance of ghosts at night brought disaster with them. And so they're understandably afraid. Walking on water is amazing to me, but it's also massively weird. It's not what I do when I get into water. Had I tried to get into a bath and just sat on top of it, I'd be disturbed. If I approached the sea to go for a swim and suddenly started walking across the top of it, I'd assume there was some kind of prank being played on me, because it's weird. And I think that's the nature of the miraculous. Yeah. It's weird. It's supernatural. That's the nature of it. So will it always look normal? No. Will my heart always respond in delight? Not necessarily. And Jesus hears their fear and speaks to it to reassure them. Tells them it's I. Don't be afraid. So Peter has a plan. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And I love Jesus' response. Come. Come. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come. As if this was a massive deal. And Jesus says, yeah. Come. And Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came toward Jesus, is what Matthew records. Peter asked to do something totally impossible. He requests something utterly ridiculous. I can sort of accept that Christ, being fully God and fully man, would walk across the water. But now Peter's empowered to do exactly the same thing with one word. Come. And there isn't a challenge you can present to God that's too great for him this morning. There isn't a request you can make of him that's too significant. There's not something you can ask of him that's too much for him this morning. You might want to throw down the gauntlet and ask something of him for him to prove himself in your life. Let me tell you, it won't be too much for him. There's no excuses. There's no lengthy explanation. Just come. But this is really what I want to get to. In the midst of doing the thing he's asked to do, what he sees causes fear and doubt in his life. He is walking on water, coming towards Jesus. Matthew 14, verse 29. Peter got down out of the boat, walked on water, and came towards Jesus. And I would have assumed in that moment, your faith would increase with every step. Right? I mean, I say to Jesus, Jesus, if it's you, call me to you. And he says, come. That first step, hanging your leg off the side of the boat, wondering what's going to happen when you set your foot down. You can imagine that would be very nervy. You can imagine that moment, sort of dangling above the sort of waterline, just, and then you step your foot down and suddenly there's an ability to put some weight on it. Bring your other foot over and, you know, still a bit like, but every step you'd assume there would be increasing confidence. I mean, I don't know how long it would be before I thought, well, let me try some gymnastics on this water then. Let me have a bounce. But what actually happens is Peter walks towards Jesus, does the thing he's asked to do. This wasn't Jesus' idea, it was Peter's. He does the thing he's asked to do, and somewhere in the process, he stops being able to do the thing he's asked to do. Verse 30 says, when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have little faith, he said. Why did you doubt? Peter is able to walk on water. And that's a miracle. And then he sees the wind. It's a really interesting statement. I would argue, second miracle. Because we don't see the wind. But he sees the wind. And whether that's the effects of the wind, whether his eyes are open to something about what he sees in that moment grips his heart with fear. He doubts and he sinks. And there's nothing to suggest the situation's changed. They were buffeted by the waves because the wind was against them. The wind is present in that moment. Mark 6 says they're straining at the oars because of the strength of the wind that's against them. So it's already windy when he asks. It's not suddenly that a gust has blown up. All night they've been fighting against the wind. Their skilled boatsmanship doesn't allow them to get further than Jesus can walk, having sailed all night. The wind's not new. But his attention is suddenly drawn to it. And I recognize, famously at some point, this passage was used to tell people to take a step of faith. If you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. And it's a fair statement. But the reality is you can take the step of faith and feel more vulnerable. And actually it's my expectation that when you take steps of faith, you feel more vulnerable than you did. Where Peter finds himself is between the boat and Jesus. He's a fisherman. The boat is a place of security for him. It's something he knows. He knows how that works. But he's walked off of that now. And he's left, stood on the sea. Where the waves and the wind and everything else suddenly feel a lot different. than they did in the boat. Because now I'm out here. And I make that observation because sometimes it's presented in such a way that if you just took a step of faith, everything would fall perfectly into place. And actually, faith is about trusting God in the unknown. And sometimes I step out and I feel more vulnerable than I did before. I feel uncertain. Because this is new. This is weird. And the reality of the storm is still there. And it matters what gets your attention in those moments. It matters what gets your attention as you walk through life. Jesus' criticism of Peter is not that he stopped looking at him. It's that he doubted. You have little faith, why did you doubt? And I am not a person who believes you're meant to ignore the reality of your life. The wind and the waves are real in that moment. The reality is, there is wind. It is battering the ship he's been in, and you assume now the waves are crashing over him in some fashion. And the issue isn't, well, Peter, you stopped looking at me. It's that he saw the wind and it did something to his heart. And I'm going to suggest to you the issue is not about being aware of your circumstance. It's about where you fix your focus. If I do this, I'm not great at illustrations, as you know. If I stick my finger an inch from my face and stare at it, I can't identify a single one of you. All of you become blurry. I couldn't pick out who was who. Actually, it all becomes a bit weird past this point. If I start pointing at people and trying to, because my eyes are focused on my finger. And it's not that you're not present, but something's got my attention more. And it's not that you're not there, but if you decided to leave, move on, go somewhere else, I'm not sure I'd be able to identify who was still here in 5 minutes if you all decided to run away, and who wasn't, because I'm staring at my finger. Those of you who have any interest in photography will have played with focus at times. And those of you who aren't that interested in photography but have tried to take a photo that's out of focus will know it's difficult to identify what's happening in the photo. Peter's walking on water. with Jesus, towards Jesus, at Jesus' instruction. And yet the waves get the focus of his attention and the wind gets the focus of his attention. And suddenly he realizes the ridiculous nature of something. He's scared by it and he doubts. And I think the reality is what I meant to do is see the waves and still keep walking. Because he told me to come. And I fix my eyes on the fact that I know he has control of the wind and the waves. And I focus my attention on the fact that I've been in a boat with him where he said to them, "Peace be still." And he's made it this far with the wind in whatever fashion Peter sees it. So I'll probably be okay when he tells me to come. Hebrews 12 and verse 1 says, "Since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith." I think that's where I'm meant to live my life. And it's not that I don't see other things. But I'm focused on the one who's able to deal with them. But I'm focused on the one who's able to tackle the issues. As I run with perseverance, enduring some stuff, dealing with the reality of life, I concentrate my attention on the fact I'm in the right corner. That there is no opposition that will overtake me in this moment. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18. "We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." And there is this reality that I have to choose at times where I focus my attention. I have to make a decision. I raised a couple of weeks ago a statement from Matthew 24 with you about the increase of wickedness causing the love of many to grow cold. It got a great response in the room. But the reality is, we live in a dark world. Things go wrong. Stuff happens. And the truth is, if you watch the news day in, day out, what a depressing thing it is. Right? It should be called bad news. Not the news, just bad news. Because that's all it seems to be half the time. We go from one bad story to another bad story to another bad story. And they might at the end finish with 5 minutes of happiness. But by that point, you've already decided you've had enough of life. And I focus my attention on that. And the insurmountable problems that seem to exist in the world and the insurmountable problems that seem to exist in my world and the fact that life's not all as it should be and how it seems and how I think it should be and everything's not going the way I hope. And actually what it does is it causes fear in my heart. And I doubt. And I wonder if I'm walking the right way. And I wonder what God's doing. And I wonder how it plays out. And actually, what I want to do is focus my attention on the fact, yes, there are insurmountable problems. There's stuff that I don't think can ever be reconciled in my limited capacity to understand. But actually, he is the God of the impossible. He's the God who does more. He's the God who doesn't work like me, think like me, act like me, or do things in the way I would choose. And he's committed to fulfilling his purpose. So what is it I'm afraid of? And the truth is, for most of us, I'm going to suggest we live with what I'm going to call bouncing focus. Where some days, all I see is the insurmountable problem. All I see is the stuff that's gone wrong. All I see is the stuff that isn't working in the way I would like, expect, or choose. All I see is the world's problems and everything. And it captivates my attention. And some days, me and Jesus are like taking on the world. But actually, there's a lack of consistency in me. My eyes aren't fixed. They're bouncing. And in truth, if I was being honest about myself, this is if we have a great meeting here, I'm happy to go out and feel like I'm going to take on the world. Excited about life, confident about what God's doing. But by Tuesday, having sat, watched the news, had my phone vibrate with various news articles coming up, not slept brilliantly, and maybe talk to somebody and they've had bad news. Suddenly all seems too much again. And it's great that we have opportunity to gather. And it's brilliant that there are opportunities for people to call your attention back to God, to remind you of his goodness, to hopefully encourage you about his ability to fulfill his work in your life. But I'm going to suggest to you that unless you go to him yourself and learn to walk with him yourself, you're going to live with bouncing focus. Where sometimes you're happy to leap off the boat towards Jesus, and there are other moments where you're sinking in the waves. And I'm not, like I say, those of you who know me will know, I'm not the type of person that wants you to ignore the reality of life. But I want you to believe God anyway. And it's why I love Romans 4. This is verse 18. Against all hope, Abraham in hope believed, and so became the father of many nations, just as it had been said to him, so shall your offspring be. Without weakening in his faith, he faced the fact that his body was good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and that Sarah's womb was also dead. Yet he did not waver through unbelief regarding the promise of God, but was strengthened in his faith and gave glory to God, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he promised. He faced the fact his body was as good as dead, and Sarah's womb was dead. But God said. And God has the power to do what he says. I don't have time, but John 16 is quite interesting. The end of it, verse 32. Jesus says, a time is coming, and in fact has come, when you will be scattered, each of you to your own home. You will leave me all alone, yet I am not alone, for my Father is with you. Verse 33, I have told you these things so that in me you might have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Jesus didn't think it was depressing that he told you that you would have trouble. He doesn't think it's depressing to tell the disciples, you're all going to be scattered. You're going to leave me by myself. You're going to abandon the thing you've been walking in. He's not ignoring the reality of life. But I am heartened, not because I don't face affliction, not because I don't face trouble, trial, temptation, the difficulties of life in this world that is groaning. I'm heartened because I know him. He has overcome the world. He is enthroned in heaven. So life's tough sometimes. And there are waves. And there's wind. And there's stuff that suddenly comes crashing at you. But can I urge you, fix your eyes on him. Not to ignore your problems, not to deny the reality of your life, but to be confident in the one who is at work through it, who is achieving his purpose in it. I would love that we didn't live with bouncing focus. I don't even know if that's a real thing, but that's what I'm calling it. Where some days I've got my eyes fixed on Jesus and I feel like I can take on the world. And some days I've got my eyes fixed on the world and I feel like I would like it to swallow me up. Because what I see will affect how I walk. What gets my attention will affect how I walk. Anyway, I'll shut up. Should we stand together and worship?